This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. It's been a long time coming, but within days, international tourists will be arriving in Australia, with travellers from Singapore allowed to visit from Sunday. It's Australia's first pandemic travel corridor since a similar deal ended with New Zealand. The tourism industry is responding with a big new campaign. This report from Southeast Asia correspondent Anne Barker.
Singapore, Australia is open and it's yours to explore.
It's Australia's biggest tourism campaign in years. Television ads are about to air in Singapore to lure tourists from one of Australia's most lucrative inbound markets.
So book a flight, pack your bags and get ready to say g'day.
Philippa Harrison heads Tourism Australia.
Singaporeans spend a lot when they come to Australia. They're our second highest spender after the USA. So a really great, valuable, high-yielding traveller for Australian tourism.
Australians can already travel to Singapore without having to quarantine, but from Sunday, a two-way travel bubble opens in earnest, allowing Singaporeans into Australia for the first time since before the pandemic. Already flights are filling fast.
We've kept a close eye on consumer sentiment in the Singaporean market throughout the pandemic, and we know that the desire for an Australian holiday has not waned. And in fact, as soon as the announcement of the borders opening happened, bookings bounced back by 25% of pre-pandemic levels. So we know the demand's there, and we know that they're going to get on the plane as soon as they possibly can.
It's not only tourists keen to come to Australia. Clarissa Lowe has 1 year left of a commerce degree at the University of Melbourne. The pandemic forced her home to Singapore 18 months ago, and she's done almost half her degree online.
After a year, I think we've had enough, and we'd really love to be able to go back.
Only now, with the border reopening, can she plan to return to Melbourne.
Yeah, I think many of us are really excited to finally go back onto campus to, you know, experience the normal student life that we have been deprived of.
Only vaccinated Singaporeans will be allowed into Australia. 85% of the city-state's population has had two doses, though a surge in cases and waning protection from the jab raises the risk that even vaccinated travellers could carry the virus to Australia. Nevertheless, experts, including Professor Dale Fisher at Singapore's National University Hospital, say it's time to open up.
Now that we're in the new strategy, which is allowing it to become endemic, then borders are only useful really when you're trying to keep it out. So once it's in and you can catch it in a mall or in a restaurant in Singapore, then there's no role for the borders.
Singapore isn't the only bubble Australia is exploring. Bali is another destination that could open soon.
That's our Southeast Asia correspondent, Anne Barker. One of the country's most secretive and important military facilities, which supports American and Australian submarines, could soon be guarded by private security personnel. The Defence Department is preparing to dump a long-standing contract with the Federal Police to provide protection for the Harold E. Holt Naval Communications Base in Western Australia. Defence correspondent Andrew Green has the story.
Since the 1960s, a high-tech communications centre in the remote northwest of Western Australia has helped pass messages between Australian and American command centres and their naval assets operating in the Indian and Pacific Oceans.
The separate needs of Australia and the United States are provided for by the joint United States-Australian Naval Communications Station, Harold E. Holt, at Northwest Cape.
For years, the secretive facility just outside the town of Exmouth has been protected by a contingent of AFP officers. But now, correspondence obtained by the ABC reveals Defence is examining other options. A letter sent last week by the head of the AFP's Western Central Command informs members that their station in Exmouth will soon close as the department moves to a private security provider early next year.
It's unclear why the government would want to move away from using the AFP, considering that we have highest level of accountability and integrity, especially when you compare it to some of the dodgy security companies that are around.
Alex Caruana is the president of the Australian Federal Police Association. He's written to the Defence Minister demanding that sworn protective service officers, or PSOs, be kept.
The PSOs that are there are very, very skilled, have very high levels of integrity, and they understand the business that are to be there. They've got more training more powers than a standard police officer.
Defence has not responded to the ABC's request for comment, but a senior figure inside the department has acknowledged the decision to move to private security arrangements could soon be overturned. The ABC has been told American officials have expressed concerns, although the US embassy is not commenting publicly. Gordon Flake is the CEO of the Perth US Asia Centre at the University of Western Australia and says he'd be surprised by any downgrading of security arrangements.
It's an area which is a sparse population, but also a very sparse security presence.
Even if federal police are no longer stationed there, he believes the Harold E. Holt Naval Facility will become increasingly important.
We're at a phase right now, if you look at the Defence Strategic Update, you look at the changing security environment in the world, where Australia should be strengthening its position in its northern and western approaches, and that includes the area around Exmouth where we have existing facilities.
That's Gordon Flake from the Perth US Asia Centre at the University of Western Australia, ending that report from Defence correspondent Andrew Green. When it comes to buying an electric car in Australia, it still can be pretty pricey. But experts say that'll soon change when lower cost models and a second-hand EV market begin to emerge. Consumer Affairs reporter Amy Bainbridge explains.
Melbourne resident Lena has had her electric car for just 3 weeks.
It's a big decision. To go electric, yes, very big, very, very big.
Living in the outer suburbs, she admits she had some reservations about her new car.
Especially with having to come here to charge until I get my home charger, and also you have to plan your trips and make sure you've got enough battery, because at the moment there's not much chargers around and you do have to map out your route to go past one or to make sure there's one in a close proximity where you're going.
It's known as range anxiety. Consumers worried about where they'll charge their cars. It's just one factor holding back growth, according to Marty Andrews, the CEO of EV charging company ChargeFox.
There are three reasons why EV uptake has been slow in Australia. The first one is choice of models for consumer. Another is just price of the vehicles. They've been very expensive but slowly coming down. And third is just a lack of infrastructure for EV owners to be able to use to charge their vehicles on the road.
The federal government's Future Fuels Strategy, released last week, includes investment for charging infrastructure. But when it comes to driving down the cost of EVs, Marty Andrews thinks more should be done.
Help to bring the price down for consumers in various ways, whether it's tax relief or rebates, etc., those sorts of things, or even emission standards to encourage the manufacturers to balance out their sales of combustion engine vehicles and electric vehicles.
Professor Renata Egan from the University of New South Wales is confident prices will come down as more second-hand EVs hit the market.
We will start to see change, and it will be driven by the big car buying customers, like the people who are buying fleet cars, because they will create a big market pull and increase diversity in the market. It'll happen with the turnover of fleet cars. As soon as there is a $20,000 electric vehicle on the market, I think that there'll be a much bigger uptake.
In Melbourne, Lena has no regrets about her purchase.
You can't hear them. And just also, like, the environmental side of things. And the cars of the future are going to be like this. So I thought, why not try it?
The industry hopes plenty of others will join her on the road soon.
And that's our Consumer Affairs reporter, Amy Bainbridge. Australia's agriculture industry will play a key role in helping the federal government meet its pledge of net zero emissions by 2050, even though the sector hasn't been set a specific target to reach. In Victoria, livestock producers are converting animal waste into electricity as part of their own emissions reduction plan, as Jane McNaughton reports.
Piggeries haven't always had a great environmental reputation, but on this central Victorian property, Jock Charles has spent 30 years investing in technology to turn pig manure into power.
We took about 2.5 years to build it, so we sort of tried to self-finance it, part of it anyway, and it was expensive. I think it was ended up close to $2 million 30 years ago, which was a fair sum of money.
Biodigestion is the process of creating an energy-rich gas by placing organic materials, such as pig manure, into a large airtight container to break down.
it goes into a big tank, a primary digester, which is heated to 37 degrees, the same as the human stomach and the pig stomach. So basically what we're doing is taking the unused fraction of feed that the pig hasn't been able to convert into protein or muscle, and we are extracting the energy from that by a sort of the use of literally trillions of little bacteria, anaerobic bacteria, and all that activity, the byproduct of that is methane gas, which can be used to fuel an engine, which drives a generator.
The biodigester reduces Berrybanks Farm energy usage by 90%, processing more than 80,000 litres of pig manure each year.
We produce the same amount of energy as we use on the site, but during the day when we're running the feed mill and a few other things, we are pulling some power in from the grid, and then in the evening we start exporting power. We are making money. In fact, we probably wouldn't still be running the business without it, I don't think. Without the digester, treating the manure, and also the sort of the offshoot business that's come of that as well. We've been able to produce products now that we sell into the garden industry. Yeah, now we make sort of a large number of products for the Melbourne market and bag about 2 million bags a year.
This environmental push is becoming more common. Margot Andre from the producer organisation Australian Pork Limited says overall the industry has reduced its emissions by 69% since 1980, while reducing water usage by about 80%.
We're actually seeing additional uptake through solar energy as well, so we're seeing more and more of our farms adopt solar technology. And then, of course, we extend that even further. We have a really strong goal of not only reducing our emissions, but we actually want to have a zero waste off farm. So nothing going to landfill off the farms by 2025.
The Grattan Institute estimates the entire agriculture sector is responsible for about 15% of Australia's emissions, but it says pig farms only make up 2% of that. Meanwhile, the Commonwealth Bank is today launching a new loan with a discounted interest rate for farmers who want to make environmental upgrades. Agribusiness manager Tim Harvey says the loan is an Australian first, and one Victorian tomato grower has already taken it up.
The Agri Green Loan, it offers a discount for the loan for eligible purposes. And some of those purposes may be reducing emissions, it could be sequestering carbon, it could be planting shelter belts, it could be a water use efficiency project or an energy efficiency project.
Commonwealth Bank Agribusiness Manager Tim Harvey, ending that report by Jane McNaughton. There are worrying findings for Australia's craft and independent brewing industry, with a new survey revealing workers are frequently harassed and abused. And a group of female industry leaders is now trying to confront the problem. Here's National Regional Reporter Jeremy Story Carter.
How's the Sunset Brewer going?
Yeah, it's good. All in.
At her brewery in the inner west Melbourne suburb of Spotswood, Jane Lewis is firmly in charge.
Yeah, what's on for the rest of the afternoon?
Setting up the canning line, getting it COP'd for canning tomorrow's, canning 600 cases of Sunset.
The co-founder of Australia's first female-owned brewery, Two Birds, is one of the success stories of the local industry. But when it comes to the experiences of other women in the male-dominated beer scene, Jane Lewis has heard just about everything.
From as simple as going into a bar and being treated like you don't know what you're talking about, through to, obviously, the worst things that you can imagine.
A group of female beer industry leaders calling themselves Beer Agents for Change has surveyed workers. 220 responded, 38% saying they'd been abused or harassed at work. Of these, 90% were women. Tiffany Waldron is part of Beer Agents for Change.
We knew that anecdotally there was an issue, but that we probably needed to hold a mirror up to the industry and show everybody what it really looks like from the outside and from the inside.
It's confronting for the multi-billion dollar craft and independent sector, which often trumpets its progressive values. Kiralee Waldhorn is a beer judge, writer and educator.
When people have tried to raise these issues within their businesses, they haven't been heard. A lot of these businesses are very small businesses, so they haven't, you know, got that corporate support and structure that, you know, some of the bigger businesses do. So I think there's definitely a lack of understanding in terms of how to actually tackle these issues in a more formalised way.
The Independent Brewers Association recently released a mandatory code of conduct for its over 500 members, which states they can have their membership cancelled if they don't uphold a central set of values and practices. Kylie Lethbridge is the CEO.
The code, I guess, gives us a mechanism to be able to say your behaviour or the way that your business is operating is not in line with our core values. And if those core values are still not being upheld, then maybe there's not a place for them in our family anymore.
The association will also soon roll out resources to help brewers respond to harassment and inappropriate behaviour. For Two Birds Brewing founder Jane Lewis, the moment of reckoning for the local beer scene has arrived.
I think there is so much reluctance. I mean, you're having a beer, you're just hanging out, you want to have a good time. You don't necessarily want to be, you know, you don't want to be the downer, but I believe in this scenario. It's not on the women. We've been uncomfortable for so long that having the conversation that may make you feel uncomfortable, it's your turn to be uncomfortable.
Brewer Jane Lewis, ending that report from Jeremy Story Carter. In the most comprehensive report completed about disadvantage in Australia, one thing's clear. Many areas that appeared at the top of the list of the most disadvantaged communities in previous reports are back. The Dropping Off the Edge report from Jesuit Social Services has measured disadvantage in every area in each state and territory. Social affairs correspondent Norman Hermont reports.
At her local food bank, volunteer Shondell Wilson is filling hampers.
Packing really depends on the family.
She spent her life in Western Sydney and now lives in the suburb of Blackett, one of the most disadvantaged communities in New South Wales. She recognises the attitudes of many who come here for help.
There is a whole background of downtrodden, of not believing that you deserve more because this is where you're from.
The 41-year-old is passionate about the food bank after noting what she and many in the community have been eating for years.
They don't have the education to be able to understand what's healthy, what's not. And we wonder why areas like this have health problems long term.
In the most comprehensive report into disadvantage in Australia, Blackett fares poorly on a number of indicators. Andrew Yule is with Jesuit Social Services, which has released the Dropping Off the Edge report, compiled by researchers at the University of Canberra.
What it shows us really clearly is that there's a small number of communities around the country that are experiencing disadvantage on a number of different issues. So that's things like housing, education, employment, and even environment as well.
The report used data from states and territories gathered up to 2019 and from the 2016 census. That means it doesn't take into account the impact of COVID. Professor Carla Treloar from the University of New South Wales believes the pandemic has only made disadvantage worse.
We're expecting that COVID has deepened these patterns of poverty and inequality and make these groups even more vulnerable.
One, two, three.
Shepparton in regional Victoria has appeared in previous reports and there's been little change in 20 years. Resident Belinda Gordon has struggled to access health care for her 8-year-old son, who experiences anxiety from past trauma.
There's a lack of paediatricians. There's a lack of specialists to actually diagnose children. There's just a lack of support.
Shepparton scores badly when it comes to access to health services, amongst the worst in Victoria. Professor Carla Treloar believes one way to break up entrenched disadvantage would be to dramatically boost payments for people who don't have a job. Belinda Gordon, who relies on Centrelink, is not optimistic.
No one wants to listen to us. They need to listen and not just pretend to listen. It's only going to get worse otherwise.
Shepherd and resident Belinda Gordon, ending that report from Norman Hermont. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.